might have outrun the beast if Gary hadn't decided to use me as bait. For an instant, the light blazed, brighter than ever, and I felt rough hands on my chest shoving me backward. Then the boundless night reasserted itself, and I floundered on the uneven ground, bouncing off a shape that loomed up before me and caused us both to trip hard. I thought it was the creature, and expected to feel teeth in my neck, filthy claws in my skin. Lashing out, I caught it on the jaw with my palm, heard a choked cry.
Alex, it's me!
Z, his hands held up to his face to guard against my blows. I put my fists to better use, pushing myself off the wet stone and helping him get to his feet. The footsteps were so close I could feel them, the tremor travelling up my shins, and I was almost grateful that Gary was now so distant that only the merest flicker of yellow light remained. It meant I couldn't see the nightmare at our heels.
Run!
I yelled, although it was hardly necessary. Z was already ahead of me, nothing but smoke against shadow, his guttural breathing the only thing giving him away. I managed to run too, sprinting across the cavern even though my legs felt like they'd been broken in a million places. It's funny how much strength the human body can find when it's really pushed, and there's nothing like the fear of a grotesque monster breathing down your neck to help you reach your full potential. I'd only taken a dozen strides when I struck something on the floor beneath me. I cried out, more in shock than in pain, feeling the cavern spin as I cartwheeled over the broken rock. It was on me before I could pick myself up. A skid of feet, then fingers like iron on my chest. It screamed, a shriek of triumph that pierced my ears and my heart, a fog of sickening breath smothering me like a net. I tried to think, tried to pull my arms free, tried to fight it, tried to do anything other than wait for it to take my life. But the truth is I was too scared to move, too scared to breathe, too scared to think. I lay there as motionless and silent as if it had already killed me. I'm not sure what happened next. I could hear more feet pounding toward me, surely too quickly to be human. I heard a crack right above my head and the dead weight lifted. There was a shout, another scream, the scuffling of cloth on rock, and the dull thump of fist on flesh, snarling, spitting, then incredibly, a voice seeming to rise from the confusion.
Go,
it said, the sound of sandpaper on wood.
There isn't much time. Get up and run.
I didn't need to be told again. I heaved my aching body off the ground and staggered blindly away, not caring where I was going so long as the madness was behind me. There was another crunch, this time followed by a pitiful groan. Then I felt hands on my arms again, wrenching my body around, the grip so hot I could feel the sting even through my overalls. They twisted me to my left, then pushed me forward.
This way, said the voice, a whisper that nevertheless seemed to make the air tremble. Watch your feet.
I lifted my leg high, feeling a rock graze the bottom of my foot. There was a chilling shriek from behind me, followed by another, and the arms pushed with more urgency, guiding me around the stalagmite that I could never have seen.
Who are you?
I asked between gasped breaths.
It doesn't matter. You need to go.
But why are...
I stopped as we rounded a corner and a light came into view, so insubstantial that it looked like the last scraps of a morning mist. The pressure on my arms vanished, leaving only the memory of its touch, and I turned to see my guide. But he was already retreating, his body blurring into what looked like a starry sky. Except the glinting sparks I saw before me weren't stars. They were the demonic eyes of a dozen creatures tearing this way. I turned and fled, the light now bright enough to make out any obstacles that stood in my way. I raced around a pillar of stone expecting to see Gary, but the glow wasn't emanating from there. It was flowing down a passageway ahead, too bright to be coming from a helmet lamp. Surely too bright, too pure to be coming from any artificial source. Something in my gut twisted so hard that it felt like I was being tickled by an invisible hand, and it took me a moment to realize what it was. Hope. It had been so long since I'd felt it that the sensation was like something living inside me. Something wonderful waiting to break free, just like I was. The sound of screams and the clutter of rocks being thrown snapped me to attention. I cast a sightless look back into the cavern, which sounded like it was home to a full-blown riot, then focused on the light, letting its warm touch pull me forward. It seemed to gain in strength as I rounded a corner, the corridor growing wider and taller as if the stone itself was being pushed back by the glow. It ended in a gnarled trunk of rock, but there was a gap large enough for me to squeeze into. When I clawed my way through to the other side, I saw Z there, pacing the identical passageway beyond and chewing what little was left of his nails. He looked up when he saw me, his expression morphing from fear to surprise to relief in a fraction of a second.
"You okay?" he said, running over. "I thought you were done for."
I nodded up ahead to where the light seemed to stream in with even more strength, picking out every last detail on the splintered walls.
"That looks like..."
I said, but I couldn't bring myself to finish the sentence for fear of jinxing it. Z managed a tired smile as he slung my arm over his shoulder and helped me stagger forward.
"What happened back there?"
he asked after a couple of steps. I shook my head. "It doesn't matter," I replied eventually, echoing the thing that had saved me. "I'll tell you about it when we're out in the open. When we're home free, okay?"
"That's a deal," he said.
"Can't be much farther. Light's pretty bright. Bet Gary's already there."
We reeled around the bend and were almost blinded. The corridor ended maybe 30 yards away, the opening blazing with so much light that the sun could have been hanging right outside. We were drenched in it, its touch like honey on our bruised skin. And it flooded inside us too, chasing away every last scrap of darkness, every last breath of cold. I'm pretty sure we could have floated down the rest of that passageway if we'd wanted to, buoyed up and brought home on a river of golden light. We were so busy dreaming that neither of us took the time to wonder how daylight could ever penetrate so deep underground. So busy laughing that we didn't notice the walls around us weren't natural, that they'd been chiseled from the stone by picks and hammers. For a blissful instant, we'd made it. We were free. Then we stepped into that portal of light together, our laughter one step ahead of us, and we saw what we both knew deep down we would. There was no sky, only rock. No sun, just remorseless spotlight scouring away all but the most persistent shadow from the tombstone walls. No trees, no life, other than the cluster of grinning forms standing before us. So close that we could make out the silver eyes and black suits, the rusting masks and filthy trench coats, the glistening lips peeled back past canine teeth. And there was no freedom, just the warden and his leather face welcoming us back with the devil's grin.
Welcoming party. For what seemed like an eternity, nobody moved. It was as if the entire cavern was frozen, a nightmare to blow stripped of motion. Or maybe it was just that time slowed down, my horror so profound that one single second of gut-wrenching realization would haunt me for a lifetime. Eventually the world seemed to catch up, time snapping back into place and bringing the scene to life. The first thing I noticed was Gary, sprawled on the floor beneath a black suit. His face was a mess, but bubbles of air were bursting on his bloody lips, so I knew he was alive. Despite everything he'd done to me, I felt anger flood my veins at the sight of his injuries. Somewhere between jumping into the river and bursting into this cavern, he'd become one of us. C was muttering something to my side, and when I heard the scuff of feet on rock, I thought he was trying to make a break for it, back the way we'd come. but when I turned to follow, I saw that he'd collapsed, his face so pale that it looked like parchment, almost transparent. Maybe if I had seen him run, I might have had the strength to follow, but I couldn't go alone. I had nothing left. I had a sudden flash of how I looked right then, just as ghost-like as Z. The only sign of colour, the spreading crimson stains where my life force was still draining out of me. My entire body was rice paper frail, ready to fold and crumple. I'd only felt this weak once before. That night so long ago when Toby had been shot, when I'd been framed. Running toward my mum, toward safety, but unable to reach home. I hadn't made it then, and I wasn't going to make it now. Both times I failed, and both times I was captured. Only this time, my punishment had to be death. I tried to take a step back, but my legs refused to obey, turning so numb and insubstantial that I didn't even feel pain when I crashed to my knees. The sound of a pistol shot filled the cavern. A second followed, then a third, and by the fifth crack, I realized it wasn't a gun at all, but the warden's hands. He was clapping slowly, each slap of his palms echoing from the walls and making me flinch. He strolled toward us, his applause relentless, before coming to a halt almost close enough to touch. Clap. I twisted my head, studying his pristine black shoes. Clap. A grey suit without the slightest trace of a crease or a stain. Clap. His lean body, his leathery neck so strung with tendons that it looked as if there was wire coiled beneath the ancient skin. Clap. And his face, so ordinary yet so wrong, like he was wearing someone else's over his own. Clap. I tried to meet his eyes, knowing that I wouldn't be able to. I was right. Just when I thought I was looking at them, I realized my gaze had slipped to his clothes or to the cavern walls. Caught in the corner of my vision, I couldn't have even told you if he had eyes, just black sockets, which seemed to suck the light from around him, which seemed to drain away what little warmth was left in my bones. Clap. I tried again, and this time I almost caught them. It was like being plunged into freezing water, my body cramping, my lungs growing so heavy I couldn't take a breath. In that instant, I witnessed things in my head that I couldn't even begin to describe. Blood, decay, screams, forced from his mind into mine, threatening to drive me insane. Clap. And just like that, they were gone, leaving only a pulsing headache where they had been probing with their filthy fingers. I shuddered, gagged, and wrenched my eyes away. Their cavern swimming back into focus. The black suits and their dogs hadn't moved, and the wheezers in their shadows were motionless too, save for the occasional spasm. I guess they knew we weren't going to mess with the warden. He clapped once more, keeping his hands poised prayer-like in front of his chest for a moment before lowering them into his trouser pockets. I just stared at the ground, as if the pebbles before me could offer a way out.
Bravo,
he said, his voice like a rasp being dragged across the inside of my skull.
I have to confess that I'm very impressed.
Please don't kill us,
came a hoarse cry from Z.
We didn't mean any harm. We...
He trailed off, his words lost in his sobs.
Very impressed,
the warden went on as if he hadn't been interrupted.
To find a way out of my prison, to escape from Furnace itself, it's quite remarkable, really.
Do we get a reward? I whispered. But it was so quiet, I didn't think anyone could have heard it. To my surprise, however, the warden began to laugh, a ragged breath that was as dry and lifeless as his face.
Oh, yes. You'll have your reward, Sawyer, and a fitting one it is.
He took his hands from his pockets and clasped them behind his back.
Where's the fourth?
I shuddered, wondering where Toby was now. There was no way he could have survived, caught in the jaws of the river with no bones left to break. But maybe his body had made it out, spat from the rock and laid to rest beneath the endless blue sky. I'm not lying when I say at that moment I would have traded my fate for his without a second thought. Better to be a spirit with earth beneath you than a corpse pinned tight by the weight of the world. He didn't make it, I replied eventually. He was injured in the explosion, but he jumped anyway. He's dead. The warden clucked his tongue as if deep in thought. He was probably trying to work out whether I was telling the truth or whether to keep looking for Toby in the sprawling guts beneath the prison. I frowned, shaking some of the confusion from my brain. How did you find us? I asked. How did you know we'd be here? Even though I wasn't looking at his face, I could feel his lips part like those of a cadaver, a dead smile, all teeth and white gummed. But when his voice came again, growled like distant thunder, there was anger there rather than humour. It seemed to radiate from him like a cold current in the ocean.
We didn't. They did. Those infected little bastards appear to have served a purpose after all.
He was muttering, apparently talking to himself rather than me.
They followed the stench of your fear, and we simply followed them. Always hungry, the rats. Did you see them?
Rats? I thought about the creature that had attacked me in the cave, its twisted mouth surely too wide to be human, and filled with rows of dripping shark teeth that seemed to stretch all the way back to its red raw gullet. Then I thought of the other figure, the one who had saved me and guided my blind body to safety. It was too strange to make any sense of, so I simply shook my head.
Just as well. Just as well. You were lucky.
He laughed again, that soulless snatch of air.
Or maybe not.
Why? What are you going to do with us?
Z asked through snot and saliva. The warden raised his arms, and the flock of dark forms behind him seemed to come to life. The dogs begin to growl, the black suits struggling to hold them back with steel leashes. Lurking behind them, the Weezers seemed to take a single asthmatic breath, their limbs jerking like they were puppets.
As you know all too well, obedience is the difference between life, death, and the other forms of existence on offer in Furnace,
said the warden, his voice quieter yet seeming to pulse around the cavern with even more force.
Your actions have cost me a great deal of time, money, and respect from the other prisoners, who have all been told that you died in the explosion, I should add. I would have you strung up and slaughtered like the vermin you are, only you are far more useful to me as specimens.
He said the last word with a relish that made my skin crawl, bending down so that his face was inches from mine.
Your punishment for trying to escape will be death, of a kind anyway. But long before it comes, you will be begging to be put out of your misery.
Until that moment, none of it seemed real. Maybe I was so tired I couldn't process it. It was all too absurd. But right then, with the warden's decaying breath on my face, I realized that just when things seemed like they couldn't have gotten any worse, they had. A lot worse.
A month in solitary,
came his whisper.
If the rats don't find a way to kill you, then the madness will. And if you make it, if by some miracle you're not a gibbering wreck when we pull you out, then the Weezers can have you. And that's when the fun truly begins.
Both C and I were crying now. We remembered Donovan's stories of solitary, of what it could do to you. We were going to die in there, in the most slow and agonizing way imaginable. Surely this couldn't happen. Surely the outside world had to know something bad was going on in Furnace. Except
I had no idea if the outside world even existed anymore. To be honest, I wasn't sure if it ever had. There was only Furnace. It was our world, our grave, our hell.
Take them away, said the warden, followed by the dull laughter of black suits as they advanced. Take them to the hole.
The hole. The moments following the warden's final command were lost to fear, blotted out by my faltering brain. I could tell you what I saw, but I don't truly remember it. The human mind is a powerful thing in many ways, but in others it's endlessly fragile. It takes only a single moment of pure terror to tear a hole in it, like a finger through a cobweb, leaving you forever just a shadow, a half person. God only knows how mine was still functioning. It could only be because when things got so bad, the emotional side of it simply shut down, making me a machine that could see, hear, think, but not feel. This automatic damage control had saved me from madness many times, but I knew it wouldn't last long, not in the hole. As soon as the warden had stepped to one side, his nightmare posse moved into the space he had left. Like dark water flooding into a vacuum, they crashed and spat around us, the dog snapping their man-trap jaws so close to our faces I could feel their hot mucus hit my skin. The wheezes convulsing with excitement as the black suits scooped us up effortlessly by our overalls. My feet dragged pathetically on the smooth floor as we were taken through a massive steel door set into the rock. It reminded me of the vault door back in the prison, only this one was half the size and looked like it had been pounded by a couple hundred mortar shells. There wasn't a fraction of its surface free from dents, and it hung off its hinges like peeling skin after a vacation. I thought for a moment that someone had broken their way out of it, only it was hanging inward, the scars covering the outside. Someone had broken in. It had to have been the creatures I had seen in the cavern, the rats, as the warden had called them. If they could do that to a meter-thick metal door, what would they have done to me? We turned corner after corner, the footsteps of the guards echoing down too many corridors to count. These passages all seemed to blur into one another, a labyrinth of mottled, flesh-coloured rock brought to life by the flickering lamps embedded in the ceiling. There were openings in the walls, too, shadowed portals that led to nothing but darkness, eyes that seemed to watch us pass with disapproval. I ignored most of these just as I did everything else, but there was one time when I snapped out of my numbness and managed to focus on the world around me. I was being pulled past an opening in the rock much wider than the others, the word infirmary stenciled in faded white paint. This one was emanating a fierce crimson light that turned the black suits and their dogs into blood-drenched ghosts. I peered around the body of the brute who held me, trying to get a better look at where the doorway led, but it was sealed off by a curtain of thick plastic strips, the same kind you see in a butcher's workshop. The wheezes split off from the rest of the group here, walking one by one through the drooping slats like some nightmare factory line. Last to go was the black suit carrying Gary, the boy's body sliding through and vanishing into the light. And then we were past it, reaching a T-junction in the corridor and turning right. It was here that the guard dropped me unceremoniously to the floor, rolling me onto my back with his giant foot and pinning me there.
"The hole's just down there," he said through a grin as wide as any I'd ever seen, his eyes glinting like a cat's caught in the moonlight. "You killed two of us in that explosion, you know that?"
I thought back to the moment the explosive gloves in the ceiling detonated, the two black suits who had inadvertently shielded us from the blast. They had both survived, for a few moments, one trying to take my life, and the other saving it. Monty turned into a monster, stripped of everything human.
"If they catch you, just don't forget your name."
"I said, did you know that?"
the guard repeated, pressing down harder, I nodded, watching my misshapen head bob in the polished black leather of his boot.
If it was up to me, we'd feed you to the dogs right here. But the boss says we're keeping you. Still, accidents happen, especially when prisoners try to escape a second time.
I nodded again, then frowned, wondering what he meant. He lifted his foot, dragging me up, and from behind him Z was thrust forward. He slammed into me and I held him, two trembling forms before a wall of black suits and skinless dogs.
Solitary's down there,
the guard repeated, his grin never faltering.
I'd say, what, 50 meters? About that,
came a gravel-voiced reply.
So, a 5-second head start seem right?
Again the voice behind him answered.
Yeah, that sounds fair. Then if I were you, I'd start running,
the guard said.
Because, as far as the warden needs to know, you made a break for it, and the dogs got you.
I didn't move, wondering if it was a trick, but two of the black suits suddenly appeared beside the one who had been holding me, each trying to restrain a monstrous canine. The foaming beasts thrashed against their leashes, the solid metal links looking as if they were about to snap like cotton thread.
5.
I didn't need any more of a hint than that. We let go of each other and turned, bolting down the corridor as fast as our legs would let us. Seeing us run, the dogs started to bark, bullets of sound that tore after us.
4, 3,
came the count, almost lost beneath the hammering of our feet.
Did he say 50 meters?
Wheezed Z.
We'll never make it.
There was no sign of anything up ahead, just bare walls that didn't even offer a shadow to hide in.
True.
How far had we run? 20 meters, maybe 30? The dogs would cover that distance in a heartbeat.
1.
I didn't hear it so much as know when it had been uttered. With a twin howl of delight, the dogs were unleashed, the screech of their 8 clawed feet on the rocks so much faster than our own laboured steps. I wanted to turn around, but forced myself not to. One slip, one scuff, is all it would take.
There!
Yelled Z, pointing down the corridor. I scanned the walls, seeing nothing in their raw red sheen.
What?
The sound more a pant than a word. I knew the dogs would have halved the distance between us, driven by madness and hunger.
The floor!
Sure enough, the ground of the tunnel had several steel trap doors set into it, each no larger than a manhole cover. I don't know what I'd been expecting when I pictured the hole, but I hadn't taken it literally. I thought it would have been a cell beneath the prison, sure, but not actually in the ground. This was no time to be choosy. The monsters were so close I could hear the ragged breaths in their throats. We reached the first of the round doors, skidding onto our knees beside it, twisting the lever and lifting the heavy hatch. The space inside, if you can call it space, was like a coffin on its end. There wasn't even enough room for us both to clamber in.
You take this one,
I said, diving across the ground to the next hatch and wrenching it open. I heard the crash of steel on steel as Z's trap door closed, and I made the mistake of looking around. One of the dogs was in mid-leap, its jaws opened so wide that I almost couldn't make out the immense body behind them. With a groan of fear, I swung my legs into the hole and dropped. I was just in time. The dog struck the top of the hatch and its body weight slammed it closed with a clang that made my eardrums ache. For a moment, I could hear it muzzling at the steel and running its claws along the surface. Then came the distant call of a black suit and the scuffling stopped.
Damn shame,
came the voice, softened by rock and metal.
Thought it had you there.
The dull throb of laughter.
Still, give it a day or two and you'll be wishing they had caught you. Have fun, boys. Don't go mad too soon.
There was the sound of the lever on top of the hatch being secured. Then there was nothing but darkness and the frenzied beating of my own heart. "See?" I called out softly, stretching my arms to gauge where the walls were. To my relief, the space was bigger than I'd first thought, although it was at most half the size of the cell I'd had on top. On top? I shook my head, not quite believing I'd used the phrase to describe furnace. Already the prison with its light and its mattresses and the sound of its inmates seemed like home. "See?" I called out, louder this time. There was still no reply. I found the wall that separated us and thumped on it with my fist, but the noise was quickly absorbed by silence. I swore and swore again, cursing with every word I knew as I kept on driving my fist against the rock. Each time it hit, the panic set in a little more. The fear of being alone, of being in the dark. And I could picture the intricate web of my mind unraveling into insanity.
"See!"
A scream this time, but my soul didn't even grant it an echo. I collapsed to the floor, found that there wasn't enough room to stretch out my legs completely. Instead, I pulled them close, my knees touching my chin, and rocked gently. The black suit was right. Pretty soon, I would be wishing that the dogs had caught me. At least they would have had the decency to finish me off quickly. This room was a different kind of beast entirely, infinitely more patient and infinitely more terrifying. The hole didn't need monsters to do its dirty work. It had no use for brutes in black suits and their silver-eyed hounds or wheezing freaks with filthy syringes. No, all it needed was me and my fear. Because alone in the silence, in the unfathomable darkness, I knew that my own thoughts would drive me mad. My own mind would kill me. Thoughts from the Abyss. When every link to the outside world is severed, time has no meaning. It ceases to exist other than as a dull memory, a vague recollection of what a minute used to be, an hour, a day. Sealed up tight, so far beneath the ground, every single second was stretched out almost to infinity, each one a vast and empty abyss where time used to reign. An ageless aeon barren of significance and consequence. When every scrap of light and sound had been taken away, reality has no meaning. It too ceases to exist. For what is reality other than an accumulation of senses? Images witnessed by our own eyes and the noises that enter through our ears. But when all those senses are starved, then the real world fades away like the last frantic gasp of a television program when the set is switched off. And when reality goes, sanity has no reason. How can your ability to behave in a normal and rational way still exist when nothing normal or rational remains? As soon as reality breaks, as soon as we are separated from the physical world, the cracks begin to appear in our minds. And through them seeps the madness that's always been there, flowing into your skull like a liquid nightmare. I couldn't tell you how long I'd been in the hole before the hallucinations began. Starved of sensory input, my brain began to concoct its own reality, causing phantoms to peel themselves from the darkness of my cell. At first, they had no faces, no bodies, other than a swirl of soft white like silken water. But then they began to solidify, filling out until they resembled people I half recognized. The first to take shape was somebody I hadn't thought about in years, Mr. Macon, a teacher I'd had way back in elementary school. He was the one who first made me want to be a magician, back before I gave my life to crime. He performed an impromptu show one rainy lunchtime, and I'll never forget the way he'd always known what everyone's card would be despite the fact they'd been shuffled back into the pack, even my eight of spades, which he picked out with a flourish. He strode toward me as if from a great distance, his features becoming clearer with every step. At first, his expression was gentle, smiling at me with fondness. the way that he'd done back in class. But I knew he was a figment of my imagination, and right now I had nothing good left inside me, just hatred of what I'd become, what I had done to myself. So I guess it wasn't surprising when his eyes narrowed and his mouth opened and he started ranting. There was no sound in this trick of the mind, but I knew what he was saying.
"You took your life and wasted it, Alex. All the advice I gave you, all that inspiration, all those hours we spent learning, you wasted my time too. And all for what? You make me sick."
I scrunched my eyes closed, but the image remained, projected onto my eyelids instead of the wall. Choking on my panic, I swept my hands in front of my face, and the hallucination responded, exploding into light and drifting in fragments around the cell. It wasn't long before it started coalescing again, this time forming a short, bird-like figure I knew immediately was my Gran. The wraith seemed to struggle to take shape this time, the face twisting to form a nightmare parody of itself that grinned grotesquely at me in a way my mum's mum never would have done.
"To think of everything your parents did for you, that we all did for you. And how did you pay us back? By breaking our hearts. How could you do that to your own mother?"
I wanted to argue, wanted to plead my innocence, but I was as guilty as they came. And those crimes I never would have dreamed of committing on the outside, assault, arson, even murder when I sent that kid Ashley falling to his death, Furnace had brought out of me all too easily. There could be no doubt about it. I was evil, rotten to the core. My grand spectral form seemed to nod at my confession, then broke apart by itself. It wasn't long before it swept into focus again, and I turned my back on it, unable to bear any more tirades from the people who had once loved me. But there was no stopping it. How could I hide when the only things that existed to me were my thoughts and the abyss? I counted 10 people in the procession that drifted through my cell, all with variants of the same message. The last 3 were my mum, my dad, and Toby, my friend from school, my dead friend from school, who materialized together and spoke as one. What they said seemed to carve out a little of my soul, and even though I forced myself to forget their words as soon as they had faded, I could never get rid of the way they made me feel. I gritted my teeth, clenched my fist so tight I could feel the sting of nails against palm. It felt like I'd been in the hole for weeks already, tortured by the ghosts of my past for hours on end. But for all I knew, it could have taken place in one of those gaping seconds, one single tick of a clock stretched to eternity by the horrors it contained. Because time had no meaning, reality had no meaning, sanity had no meaning. And when everything else has been taken away, you have no meaning. You simply don't exist. I didn't think I was going to survive that first second, first hour, first day. But there must have been a part of my mind that wasn't convinced I was wicked. Somewhere deep inside me, past all the chaos, all the anger, the kid I'd once been still remained, and he wasn't going to let me be consumed by my own nightmares. Another figure began to form from the spots of white light in my cell, right by my side. I shied away from it, unable to bear another attack, but instead of hounding me with screams and accusations, this one seemed to laugh, a gentle chuckle that was so alien to me that at first I couldn't even work out what it was.
"Would you look at the state of yourself?" the voice said,
and I recognized it straight away. Snapping my head around, I saw Donovan crouch beside me, his dark skin now glowing like some corny Christmas angel. Light seemed to spill from his eyes, pushing back the walls of the cell and the heavy curtain that had dropped over my thoughts.
"It's a good thing there ain't no windows in here. You look like a dog's ass."
I laughed. Another unrecognizable sound. But it soon died away.
I'm a bad person, Dee, I said, my voice slurred beyond recognition, but clear enough in my head. I deserve to be here. Donovan reached up a hand and slapped me around the back of the head. I couldn't feel it, but the touch seemed to chase even more of the cold shadows from me, leaving a welcome warmth in their place.
If I hear any more of that crap, then I'll give you something to cry about, he said,
the grin never leaving his face.
That's exactly how they want you to feel. Those are the same thoughts that went through my head when I was down here. This room, this pit, it's designed to suck every last bit of strength from you, every last scrap of fight. Why do you think they've been used in solitary confinement in prisons for thousands of years?
To punish the guilty? The dark part of me replied.
To make us weak, Alex. To rip out our spirit. To crush our self-worth. To make us feel like we don't have a right to escape. Because if they do that, then they can pretty much guarantee we'll never want to get out. If they break us, if they break you, they could keep you a prisoner in a place with no walls. You're a good kid, Alex.
And you're a figment of my imagination, I mumbled, but I was smiling.
I know, he replied. But call me one again and I'll kick your ass. I might not be real, but if I was, I'd be saying the exact same things. Don't give in, Alex. Don't let him win. You beat him once and you can do it again. Don't let this place break you. Keep your mind busy. Keep yourself occupied. Find things to do. If you're doing things, then you still exist, right?
I nodded to his fading form, watched his body dissolve into the darkness like sugar in tea. He was gone, but he'd taken my fear and futility with him. I knew it had been just another hallucination, but it had brought me back from the edge. The voice in my head masquerading as Donovan meant that there was a part of me which understood I didn't deserve to be here, which still had faith in me, which knew I had escaped once and could do it again. And it was right. If I kept myself busy, then it meant I was still here, still flesh and blood and bone. It would keep the madness at bay. I started immediately scrabbling up and using my arms to map out the exact dimensions of my cell. I could just about stretch them from wall to wall, which brought a little relief. It meant that I could probably lie diagonally with a little room to spare. The stone beneath my fingertips was solid, cut as smooth as the walls and the corridors outside. Even to the touch, it conveyed a sense of its strength. It would take dynamite to make a scratch on it, and that's probably all it would do. But there was condensation there, a clammy sheen that felt like sweaty skin. I vaguely remembered Donovan saying he'd survived by licking the moisture from the walls, but I wasn't quite thirsty enough yet. I still felt like I'd swallowed half the river when we'd jumped. Next, I reached up to the top of the cell, which was less than an arm's length above my head. Feeling the ceiling so low threatened to bring back the claustrophobia, but I kept it at bay by trying to work out the exact size of the hatch, the method by which it had been wedged into the rock. It must have been just wide enough for a body and sealed tight, not even the slightest hint of light creeping through the joint between metal and stone. I remembered how heavy the hatch had been when I'd lifted it, maybe minutes, maybe hours earlier, and then I'd been pumped with adrenaline. I didn't think I'd have the strength to push it all the way open from below, even if it wasn't locked. I paused, taking a good few breaths of stale, warm air. Then I got down on my knees and started to investigate the floor. Like the walls, it was made of rock, polished flat. It was an unbroken slab, save for one corner where I could feel something metallic set into the surface. Running my hands gently over it, I discovered it was a small grill. I stuck a finger inside, feeling nothing where the floor should be, and realizing that this was both my toilet and my air supply. I was grateful. A month doing my business on a watertight stone floor would lead to death by drowning in the most horrible way possible. I hooked up a ball of spit and launched it through the opening, hearing a distant plop. Then I tried to pull on the grill, but it didn't do much more than rattle. It was far too small a gap to escape through, not that I'd really want to, knowing what was down there, but it might have another use. A weapon, perhaps. I pictured myself trying to bludgeon a black suit with a foot-wide iron grill and laughed. It was ridiculous, but it was wonderful. My mind was working, too busy to give the darkness and the loneliness and the madness any room. I placed my hand on the wall that separated myself from Z's, hoped he was doing the same thing, trying to keep busy, trying to stay real. Then I leaned back, ran a hand through my hair, and tried to come up with a plan. Screams. Panting like an overweight dog and sweating more than a sumo wrestler in a sauna, I pulled my aching fingers free of the grill and collapsed. It was still in place, but I'd been wrenching it and pushing it and stamping on it and twisting it for what seemed like forever, and its resolve was starting to wane. Another few attempts, maybe, and it would be loose. I still hadn't thought of a way to use it, but my mind had been busy with other things. I'd sat for what must have been hours going over everything in my head, trying to make sense of what was happening here. Back in Furnace's general population, with all the other inmates, we'd been so focused on getting the hell out that I guess we didn't let ourselves think about the other stuff. The wheezes, the monsters brought back, all bulging muscles and bloody skinned, then somehow turned into black suits. Yeah, those thoughts had been in our heads permanently, but they'd been pushed to the side so we could give everything we had to the break. Down here, there was nothing else to do but think. I started with the wheezes in their gas masks, stitched into faces that looked so old, so decayed that they could have belonged to corpses. Black eyes like coal set into dark pits rubbed red raw. Everything about them was wrong. The way they looked, the way they screamed to each other, the way they moved, all staggered jerks like marionettes being operated by a child. And the way they injected their prey with darkness. They had to be human. What else could they be, but twisted and broken beyond repair? By age, perhaps? Or were they demons spawned here in the pits of hell? They certainly looked the part, and why else would they take people kicking and screaming down to the bottom of the world, to the pits beneath the prison? It would explain why those victims returned, morphed into freaks with grotesque bodies and appetites to match. What could do that to a human other than a creature of darkness, a demon? It would explain the warden too, because if anyone reminded me of the devil, it was him. But even as I thought it, it sounded crazy. Besides, the thought of the devil and his slaves didn't fill me with one iota of the terror I felt when I thought of the most probable alternative. Science. Shuddering involuntarily, I crouched forward again and hooked my fingers through the grill. It rocked back in its socket as if afraid that this time I might pull it free, but after a couple of tugs that almost ripped my arms from my shoulders, it remained stubbornly locked in place. I'd heard the grating of mortar on rock, though, and I knew it was weakening. I wiped the sweat from my brow, trying not to think what my hands must look like after groping the toilet for hours on end. Banging the back of my head gently against the wall, I attempted to analyze the thoughts racing through my skull. Science. Bad science. It made sense. I mean, what had the warden called us? Specimens. Lab rats for some sick and twisted project. Surely some genetic experiment could be responsible for turning Monty into a creature so muscular it had threatened to burst right out of its stitched skin, so furious that it had broken Kevin into 1,000 pieces barely held together by his prison overalls. But then turning Monty from a monster into a black suit? I could feel the thoughts all tumbling together and shook my head to separate them. Turning to the wheezes again, I wondered if they too had been the result of some kind of gene therapy.
We'd covered the basics of biology at school, learned that genes were the building blocks of every living thing, but other than that, it was all completely over my head. Although I hadn't been so devoted to my life of crime that I'd missed the stuff on the news about gene maps and all the neat tricks they'd done with mice, giving them diseases, making them be born with a human ear on their back or an extra kidney, even changing their sex. And if you could do that to a mouse, then why not a kid? I groaned, realizing that this theory sounded just as insane as demons stalking the corridors of Hades. There was no way they could turn a man, a child, into a monster. It couldn't happen. And what kind of nutcase would want to? Who would go to the trouble of framing innocent kids for murder and dragging them into furnace just to mess with their genes? But my mind kept flicking back to the infirmary we had passed, the wheezers all marching through the plastic slats like surgeons going to work. Taking another deep breath, I lifted the loose end of the grill and wedged my heel against it. Bracing my back against the wall, I pushed as hard as the space would let me, hearing the metal loose a creak of distress. My foot shifted as the grill bent, but my leg cramped before I could finish the job. I lay still, rubbing the knotted muscles beneath my overalls and waiting for the throbbing agony to subside. Could science explain the creature that attacked me back in the cabin? And the constellation of silver eyes racing through the darkness drawn to the smell of fresh blood? And what about the thing that had saved me? I remembered the touch of his skin, so hot it burned me even through my overalls. Science could change somebody's appearance, certainly, but make it feel like there were glowing embers set under their flesh? Surely that was impossible. So what were the rats? Why didn't they cluster around the warden like all his other sick freaks? Why were they running like wild dogs in the lightless tunnels beneath the prison? Each time I thought I had an answer, a million different questions presented themselves. The pain in my calf had dulled to an echo, beating in time to my heart. I tentatively flexed my leg, pointing and rotating my foot like we used to do in soccer after a Charlie horse. The thought inevitably conjured a rush of memories. Sunshine on our backs as we belted the ball up and down the field. Laughter roared out over the world in celebration. I wondered if my old mates were playing now. Wondered who had replaced me at left back and who was taking Toby's shots up front. This time it felt as if my mind was cramping, bolts of white-hot pain flashing across the back of my eyes. I growled with anger, a sound that could have come from an animal. Then suddenly, pumped with adrenaline, I began pounding the grill with my feet. After the first dozen strikes, my heels were bruised and bloody, but it only took a couple more blows before the rigid metal popped from its frame. The squeal of rendering iron was deafening, and the clatter of the grill as it dropped onto the rock reverberated around my cell like a wasp. But that was one advantage of being in such a tightly sealed space. There were no cries of alarm from outside, no stamp of booted feet on the path above my head. Crouching forward, trying not to put any pressure on my battered feet, I picked up the grill and held it to my chest. It was still useless, but the fact that I'd been able to pry it loose was an achievement that brought a grin to my face, so wide that my cheeks were aching. I would have kissed the bloody thing if it hadn't been covered in crap. Instead, to celebrate, I got to my feet and used the toilet, the sound of splashing below giving the pleasant illusion of space. I didn't sit down again straight away, happy to let some blood flow to my legs. While I was standing, I swung the grill at the wall between my cell and Z's. After I had been in the dark so long, the spark it produced was like a firework going off in my eye, the clang deafening. I blinked, enjoying the spots of light that had burned in my retinas. Then I whirled it around again, harder this time. Another spark, flashing the cell into life for a fraction of a second, wet red walls like the inside of a stomach. I stopped, putting my head against the cold stone and waiting for a response. C must have heard it. Human voices might be too soft to penetrate rock, but I knew sound travelled through solid objects a hell of a lot better than through air. Surely an impact like that must have carried. But there was nothing, not even a scratch. I swung it again, more from frustration than with any hope of a response. Then I dropped the grill to the floor.
"See!"
I howled, the volume of my own voice somehow making the panic rise up in my gut. I clamped it before it could get any worse, slapping my palm against the wall before sliding onto my haunches again. A couple of deep breaths calmed me down, and they also brought tiredness, my eyelids drooping as if drawn shut by my last spluttered exhalation. I laid down as best as I could in the tiny space, wedging my head in the corner opposite the toilet and stretching my feet out. I wasn't sure if sleep would be able to find me here, hidden so well in the rock, so far underground, but it was on me in seconds. Everything we'd been through since we'd tried to escape had drained me of all but the last gasp of wakefulness. And with a sigh, even that fled, freeing me, if just temporarily, from my tomb. The dream, when it started, was more real than the reality I'd just left. I guess it was bound to be. In the hole, I was completely cut off. There was no light, no sound, no connection at all to the everyday world. But in the dream, my senses were bombarded with fresh information. It was a wonderful feeling until I realized where the illusion was taking me. When I did, my hollow groan seemed to settle over me like a thunderhead. I was walking down the corridor of the house where Toby and I had been caught. Although this time, Z was there instead, a few meters ahead of me, running at full pelt. He turned in my direction, and the way his face morphed into a grimace of pure fear was like a dagger in my heart. There was something right behind me. I started running too, my pace sluggish, the way it always is in nightmares. Z looked back again, and even though he was gasping for breath, he unleashed a haggard, desperate scream. He reached the door to the living room, now guarded like Furness's infirmary by a curtain of plastic slats. With a choked cry, he swung around and vanished through them, and I followed without thinking, feeling the filthy strips like pondweed on my face. On the other side of the curtain was the room where the Weezer had picked Toby to die and me to be framed for murder, where the black suits had laughed as one of them, Moleface, pulled the trigger. Only this time, the bodies of a dozen boys hung limp and bloody from the ceiling, suspended upside down, ancient ropes tight around pale ankles. They were all dead, and they were all screaming. I felt terror grip me. And I mean really grip me, so hard I thought my insides were being crushed, my heart too constricted to properly pump my blood, my lungs unable to expand, my vision flickering on and off like a faulty projector. C flew into one of the corpses, the impact knocking him off balance. He careened to the floor, spinning around to face whatever was behind us. I ran toward him, terrified but knowing that we stood more of a chance if we fought together. I thought he'd be grateful, but instead he lashed out at me with his feet, screaming words that were soundless but which were all too clear.
"You're one of them! You're one of them! You're one of them!"
I tried to argue, but before I could, the figures above me started to convulse.